for the special initiative. It's called the 2030 Committee, and I'll explain a little bit more about that. My name is Mike Walton. I have the privilege of chairing this activity. We'll go through with introductions in a moment. But let me tell you a little bit more about what this activity is about, our charge, and how we hope to proceed. As you know, the chair of the Transportation Commission tasked the department, the Texas Department of Transportation, with coordinating a comprehensive update of the state's mobility and maintenance needs for the next 20 years to the year 2030, hence the name of the committee. This update will provide an opportunity to present an estimate of the state's transportation needs in the context of today's economic reality. Now, the charge to the committee is to issue a report by December of 2008 on the state's transportation needs, specifically to quantify and describe the need for infrastructure investment over the next 20 or so years. The 2030 Committee, as we have now been referred to often, will serve as an advisory panel to oversee the update of activities by a team of researchers from the University of Texas at Austin Center for Transportation Institute and the Texas A&M University System, Texas Transportation Institute. So we have the two research groups coming together to provide the analysis and perform, if you will, the assessment that is being done. The team will look to the 2030 Committee for guidance on mobility and maintenance goals that will be measured in the needs assessment process. And the first meeting of the committee was on June the 24th, and the second one was just before this event. Also asked by the chair of the commission that the committee conduct public hearings, and we have organized several of those around the state, this being the first. And we hope that in the public hearing that you will provide us with additional input that will be useful to us on the needs assessment. So we're delighted that you're here. We're pleased that you're here to participate in the process. I know that some of you wish to speak and others are here to listen, but we value your input. You choose not to speak, please provide us with written comments. The report from the team will be completed in December. It'll be submitted to the Transportation Commission. There will be a hearing scheduled before the commission in December, around December the 18th, and then we'll go from there. The process tonight is that we've invited several people to come and speak who represent particular agencies or organizations. We have two that have indicated or responded and accepted our invitation. We've asked them to stay within a 5 to 10 minute framework. Following that, then, we will have the opportunity for others, particularly those of you who have signed up to speak, and would ask that you stay within the traditional 3 minute limit, if you will. We'll be providing some guidance to you and a giant hook if you exceed that time, but bear with us, because obviously we want to get your input. But then again, if it's been covered before, it doesn't help to be redundant. We'd like any information that you want to provide in writing as well. Now, in terms of the members of the 2030 committee, I'm going to ask that they introduce themselves. We'll start on my right, your far left, with Tom Johnson.
I'm Tom Johnson from Austin, Texas.
Ruben Bonilla, Corpus Christi, Texas.
I'm Rose Hernandez from Harris County, and I'm here representing Harris County Judge Ed Emmett.
I'm Drew Crutcher from Odessa, Texas.
Had to reach for the mic. I'm David Marcus. I'm from El Paso, Texas, and I'm on the Camino Real Regional Mobility Authority.
And David serves as vice chair of the committee.
I'm Roger Nober from Fort Worth, Texas.
I'm David Laney from Dallas, Texas.
Gary Thomas with Dallas Area Rapid Transit.
And again, we're delighted you're here. We'll begin the hearing with the first speaker on the schedule, Joe Cantalupa, who is the executive director of the Campo. Joe, delighted you're here. You can come up here if you wish. That's fine.
It's not on. No?
Nope. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak tonight. I will honor the 5 to 10 minute mark. My name is Joe Cantalupo, and I am the executive director, newly appointed executive director of the Capital Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, known as CAMPO. And during my few minutes up here, I just want to give you some very broad view of the needs we face in our region, and then maybe tell you a little bit about what we're doing to look ahead. Our current transportation improvement program anticipated about $575 million of Category 2 or Metropolitan Mobility Funds for our region. But under the current fiscal condition that we're in, we're only expecting about $535 or $540 million of that. And that's really not the worst part. The worst part is, instead of that money being available over the course of 4 years, it's got to be available over the course of 11. And that's really not the worst part. The worst part is that our needs continue to grow. When we did the 2030 regional transportation plan, we estimated that the population by 2030 was expected to hit about 2.75 million people. That's not quite nearly a doubling, but it's still a very, very huge increase. The plan included a huge set of projects that estimated that were estimated to cost about $13.2 billion, and that was in 2003 dollars. The net of all that, though, was that the plan would result still in an increase in congestion. In other words, in spite of the investment that the plan was calling for and that the plan thought we could afford as a region, congestion would still increase under our estimates and our projections. There is something called the Texas Congestion Index, which I'm sure you've heard about. But for our region, it was estimated to go from about 1.21 in 2000 to 1.39 in 2030, the life of the plan. That really represents an almost doubling of the time people would spend in congestion during peak periods. And that's even, again, even with that $13.2 billion worth of projects we had laid out. When we get beyond the fiscal constraint that the plan was developed under, and we looked at the 2004 Metropolitan Mobility Plan and its update in 2006, that gives us what we think is a broader, if not more accurate, view of our needs. The TMMP assumed that everything that was called for in the 2030 plan would be implemented and identified the funding that would be needed to bridge the gap. That was another $10 billion. So when it was all adjusted up to 2005 dollars, it comes up to about $26 or $27 billion in order for us to get every road in the region out of level of service F. And that is, you know, from when the plan was done to 2030. That's a huge, or at least to me, a huge mind-boggling amount of money. That money represents about another 900 lane miles of arterials and about 200 additional lane miles of freeways. It also identified the possibility or the ability of transit, biking, and pedestrian to reduce at least some of that need for lane miles. In addition to that, we've just completed a regional freight study, and that regional freight study calls for another 90 freight-specific roadway improvements above those and beyond, above those identified in the 2030 plan, in order to keep freight moving safely and efficiently. So that, in a minute or two, is the big picture. We're starting to do our 2035 Regional Transportation Plan update, which needs to be adopted by our policy board in 2010. And some of the things we're looking at, or we'd like to look at, is really better linking land use and transportation. You know, we don't want to be in the business of dictating land use, and we shouldn't be in the business. But there's no denying the fact that there is a link between land use and transportation. And in my view, at least, we're going to have a hard time solving the mobility problem if we don't start paying more attention to the patterns of development and how they affect our ability to provide transportation facilities and services. Again, knowing that highways are very important, they will remain important, we need to get a little bit beyond that and start looking at other modes of transportation. One of the things we'd like to do with our 2035 plan is develop a regional vision for transit. We've got a lot of good, great transit providers. We'd like to add a little bit of value by helping that link all their plans and programs into one regional vision. And we also, I think, as an MPO, need to start thinking beyond our boundaries. We have two or three counties outside of the Campo region that are very close, you know, maybe within one or two census periods of becoming a part of the MPO boundary. And I think that if we're really going to address regional mobility, we need to think beyond the immediate region and need to do a little bit more of a deliberate job planning for the areas just outside of our metropolitan areas. One of the things we'd like to see is a more deliberate approach from the state that allows us to make it easier to extend beyond our boundaries and maybe even tie the money we get for metropolitan mobility to our ability to extend and do planning for those areas. And I think in terms of just sort of a broad big picture overview of what our needs are and what we're thinking about, that's it. I just want to make one comment. Before moving to Texas a year ago, I was with the State Department of Transportation, the Delaware DOT. Now, I know you can fit about 136 Delawares in Texas, but we faced a similar financial crisis years ago and did not have a deliberate approach like this. I think it's a really wonderful thing that you all are doing, pushing us ahead toward looking at not constrained, fiscally constrained need, but just sort of overall need for mobility. I think that if we have a chance of improving and preserving our mobility in our metropolitan areas, we need to get beyond thinking about it in terms of just how much money we have, and we need to think about it in terms of what the needs are, figure it out from that angle. And I know for a fact that there aren't a lot of places in the country that are looking at it in this way. So I wanted to thank you for taking this on, and we look forward to helping you in any way we can. Thanks.
Joe, thank you very much. Any member of the committee have questions of Joe? Not welcome. Welcome to Austin. And Delaware certainly had some very good DOT directors, Ann Canby being one, so we're pleased to have you in Austin. Next, Bob Tesh, chairman of the board of Central Texas Regional Mobility Authority. Bob? I think these mics are working now. Your choice, whichever one you like. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for this opportunity to share the views of the Central Texas Regional Mobility Authority with this important planning body. I was looking forward to seeing my old friend Ed Emmett here today, but someone is representing him. I moved here from Houston in 1984 from Harris County. Ed was a state representative at the time. Hadn't seen him in a long time.
I'm sorry he couldn't be here tonight.
He's in a very important position.
He sends his apologies, but we are hosting the next meeting in Houston. Hope that you can join us.
Well, thank you. I realize that many of you here, by the way, I'm joined by the Central Texas Regional Mobility Authority's Executive Director, Mike Heiligenstein, who's here, and we have a few handouts, as well as another board member, Jim Mills, who is here with me today, and I appreciate both of them being here. I realize that many of you are not yet as familiar with regional mobility authorities as some of us in the room. And if you would indulge me just a moment or two to give you a bit of background on that before I get into some of our recommendations and comments. We've had great success as the state's first regional mobility authority here in Central Texas. To my knowledge, we're the first toll road authority who has succeeded at the following three things: bringing our first project in on time, bringing our first project in on budget, and taking it, operating it through to positive cash flow within the first year of operation. And if there's another toll road authority anywhere in the country that has done that, then I stand corrected. But to my knowledge, that has been achieved by our five-year-old agency. And one of the reasons is because of the leadership that we've had. We've made the decision, the very conscious decision. Mr. Mills and I were on the original board, and we decided to hire the best and the brightest and go quality all the way, because we were keenly aware of the importance of this type of an entity having success in the state. We now have seven, I believe it is, regional mobility authorities around the state, and we've tried to help each one of them with our experiences, and I believe we're seeing a lot of success, not just with ours, but with others as well. And I would just say one other thing, that because of these decisions we've made, we're now recognized throughout the country as a real positive force in congestion relief and mitigation, if you will. And Mike Heiligenstein, and I won't beat his drum too much, has been recognized. He's a big part of the reason for that, and he's now been appointed to the board of directors of the International Bridge, Tunnel, and Turnpike Association, and we're very proud of that. And I think it speaks well not just for Mike, but for the success that we've had. So hopefully that is the backdrop. We'll have some credibility in some of the things that we would like to share with you. There's an old Chinese saying that that a road is good for 100 years and bad for 10,000 years, and there's nothing more important to Central Texas than a good transportation system. But truly, it is on the brink of losing some of the benefits of good mobility. Not long ago, Dell Computer, home-based here in Williamson County, announced an expansion, but not here in Tennessee. And the reason was largely due to traffic congestion around its headquarters. Other large corporations, General Motors included, have made similar decisions in terms of the location of their jobs. And so these kinds of stories are playing out all around the country, and they're playing out right here in Central Texas as well. And that's because tax abatements are no longer enough to attract job-enhancing and job-creating economic development. But mobility ranks very high in top recruiters' criteria in selecting a place for their location or their business. President Reagan said once that every day begins with possibilities, and it's up to us to fill it with things that move us toward progress. We have several very congested corridors here in Central Texas that are rapidly becoming dysfunctional. 290 East, 71 East, 183 South, 290 West at the Y in Oak Hill, and 45 Southwest. Together, the first four have reached this capacity basically just due to filling up and during an increasingly wide period of time in the morning and in the afternoon during traffic, during the peak traffic times, these roads are dysfunctional, and they basically need to be replaced. The CTRMA has a plan to solve this congestion problem. We're not the only problem solver, but we're a significant player. And we believe that the solution is to expand these facilities and replace existing facilities with expanded non-toll lanes and build new capacity that is paid for through toll revenues. Now, the critical message here is not just build toll roads. It is new capacity and providing a choice. We did a study. Point I wanted to make was, by providing new capacity, we relieve the non-toll capacity as well. And with our first project, the highly successful 183A, we did a study in Cedar Park at Leander area, and it was learned quickly that those local folks who drove on the existing 183 found huge amounts of relief, traffic relief, after we opened 183A, the toll road. And it gave them really a sense of not just a choice of which road to drive, but a choice of when and where. If they weren't in a huge hurry, they'd stay on the old road and benefited from the relieved traffic congestion. If they're in a big hurry, they get on the toll road and get there in a hurry. So we think is unavoidable. And I'd like to pause just for a minute and make the comment that everybody knows we need more roads. And everybody knows that we are short of capital, and we're wringing our hands, many of us, some of us, hopefully not us, in figuring out ways to get that done. And so the real story here is that we have to do more with less. We have to figure out how to utilize our resources more efficiently and more effectively. We have to get more bang for the buck. And that's where we believe that our agency is on the cutting edge of, and I'll speak to that in just a moment, but that's where we feel like we shine. We are committed very strongly to economic growth and development. We think it's critical to the heartbeat of the quality of life in any community. In order to do this, we work closely with local and regional officials, city officials, county officials, in interconnecting our planned roads in ways that provide maximum ingress and egress for development sites. For example, the marquee intersection on our first toll road, 183A, the intersection of 1431 and 183A, there now are 2,000 jobs being created from the new hospital that has been opened there. Would not be there if it weren't for this road. 1890 Ranch, which is a 900,000 square foot major retail center. Both of these two facilities working together have created over 2,000 retail, office, and medical jobs in the area, which, needless to say, is a huge contribution to the quality of life in that area. We have other corridors who will have great economic development opportunities. The 290 East Corridor and the 71 East Corridor will provide opportunities when they're upgraded and can move traffic along better. They'll provide opportunities for local people to work closer to their homes and avoid long commutes that burn fuel and everybody knows are very inefficient. So the RMA model that we represent is unique. It's when it became so clear this past year and a half that the funds that were not going to be available to build this $1.5 billion system that we so desperately need on those five roads that I just mentioned, this agency stepped up and said, this is why they created us. We're not here to wring our hands and say, what are we going to do unless we get more gas tax? It's like, okay, how can we figure out creative ways to do more with less? We need the roads built. So we went out to the national financial community and said, here's what we have. We have $1.5 billion worth of projects to build. we can come up with about two-thirds of the money. We can come up with a third of it through toll revenue, another third of it through federal government loans, through TIFIA. And we need the other third. And if you're smart enough and can help us enough and creative enough and can work with us in ways that will help us bridge this one-third gap so that we can build these important roads, well, we'd like to work with you to make that happen. And so we went out and we had about 11 interested parties, some of the biggest financial players in the country, boiled it down to, is that my time?
Okay. Okay. Getting close, Bob.
Okay. We boiled it down to five participants, five who had submitted proposals. And as a result, we're going to be able to bridge that one-third gap of that $1.5 billion with some very creative financing provided by our new financial partner, J.P. Morgan. I say our new financial partner. This was the winner of those who proposed, and if all goes well, we will sign with them. And we're going to be able to get these roads built, and we're going to be able to get them built without surrendering equity ownership, without compromising our future long-term income stream that we feel Central Texas desperately needs to retain in order to keep us out of the congestion problems in the future that we're currently in today. If we ever get out of this mess, we feel like that income stream from these roads and that economic engine that we're able to preserve through this creative financing, and I give Mike Heiligenstein more credit than any other person. We worked very hard for 9 to 10 months on figuring out ways to put this financial package together, but we're going to be able to do it and get these roads built. And I think, Mike, our cost of funds is going to be somewhere around 6% blended, isn't it? So we feel like if we can responsibly borrow the money to build these roads without giving up that economic engine, that long-term income stream, and do it in a responsible way, we feel like that's the best thing for our citizens and for the quality of life in our community, in our region. We feel very strongly about that, and we're very proud of the fact that we're moving toward making that happen. Let's see. I think that pretty well said. Mike, would you add anything? Okay. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Good. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Any questions, Bob? David?
Mr. Tesh, I just want to thank Mike. Mike was instrumental in helping the Camino Real Regional Mobility Authority get started a year ago. And I understand you all had to import your CFO from El Paso, Mr. Chapman, who's a good friend of mine as well. But congratulations and thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that because as the state's first regional mobility authority, and with that, I'm going to take that as a segue to tell you a brief little story. Our board is made up of seven community leaders. Mr. Mill is one, I'm one, and we serve as volunteers, all of us, for one single reason, that is we love our region, we want to help. The chairman's appointed by the governor, and the governor told me shortly after my appointment that he said, you know, you must feel pretty good having picked the chairman of the state's first regional mobility authority because your success is something you'll take with you the rest of your life. And I said, yeah, Governor, it does. And he said, of course, your failure is something you'll take with you the rest of your life, too. That stuck with me, and I'll tell you that we've been motivated to not only work hard to be successful, but to help those others that follow us, because it's very important, we think, that the regional mobility authority model in Texas be successful across the board. And I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Our next, we have several people signed up, and I'll just, the first one's been here with the Texas Transit Association, Ben, followed by Diane Cunningham, followed by Bruce Prime. Ben.
Thank you, sir. Good evening. My name is Ben Hur. I'm the Executive Director of the Texas Transit Association. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get serious about transit in Texas. Public transportation is often a low priority in TxDOT and with the leadership of Texas. It's time to think about the future of public transportation in the state because Texans are showing a strong interest in transit now, and the demand for transit is growing. Current transit ridership is high, Dallas Area Rapid Transit just announced record numbers and riders on its light rail system. In Austin, Capital Metro just announced a 55% increase in bus ridership. Transit managers across the state tell us they're experiencing increases of 20%, 25% and higher. Build it and they will come. Commuters are filling up the park and ride lots as fast as we can build them. From Dallas to Houston and points in between like the Woodlands, Texans are taking the commuter bus to work in record numbers. Transit agencies report that the demand continues to increase with new riders and new demands from the community. Small urban and rural transit managers report that their biggest increases are hardworking but lower income people who are just looking for an economical means of getting to work. Small town employers are asking local transit agencies for assistance in transporting their employees to work. Look ahead to the future needs of transit in Texas. Texas is now the number two retirement state in the nation. AARP reports that in less than 20 years, 20% of the population will be senior citizens. In Texas, we can expect even higher numbers. Sooner or later, these senior Texans will have to give up their car keys, and they will be looking for public transportation to assist them in their active lifestyles. The Texas population is growing, and immigration is fueling the majority of that growth. Research shows that recent immigrants are more likely to use transit than native-born residents, and immigrants are more likely to use transit even after years in the U.S., and even when their income increases substantially. The future residents of Texas are going to use transit. The current demand for transit is at record-breaking levels. The demand is increasing today, and the demand will continue to increase between now and 2030. There's no question about the demand for transit and the challenges it provides us. The questions are, will TxDOT and the leadership of Texas respond to this transit challenge? Should a state public transportation department be formed separate from TxDOT to meet the growing needs of transit? And will TxDOT and the leadership of Texas support the federal, state, and local resources required to meet the demand for public transportation now and in the future? It's time to get serious about transit in Texas.
Ben, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questions?
I actually have one question. As we look at the needs for Texas, how could we take into account transit needs? How should we do that?
In many cases, I would say talk to the communities, our metropolitan transit authorities, the small urban and rural transit agencies, and the MPOs that do the planning. Start there, but also talk to the citizens and get response from them.
Anyone else? Good. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
Next is Diane Cunningham. Welcome.
Thank you, and good evening, and thank you for letting me speak tonight. My name is Diane Cunningham. I'm with Citizens for Change on Highway 71, CC 71. I also live in Travis County. On State Highway 71 in western Travis County, just outside of Austin, there has been a rapid increase in traffic accidents, resulting in numerous fatalities and serious injuries over the last few years. Many concerns have been raised about this deadly stretch of highway. In just a 2-mile section centering around the Bee Creek Valley, there have been at least 14 deaths in the past 2 years. This area has also been seeing a tremendous increase in residential and commercial construction, which has placed many more vehicles on what used to be considered a rural highway. Now there are thousands of drivers commuting on this road from all over southwestern Hill Country area, turning it into an urban roadway. There are an additional 6,000 home sites already approved by the County Commissioner's Court. Besides increased traffic, there are other contributing factors such as a high speed limit, steep hills and valleys, sharp curves, no shoulders, no separation between oncoming traffic. The Texas Department of Transportation, TxDOT, has been very slow to respond to this crisis due to a lack of funding. During this period of delay, numerous lives have been lost and people have suffered serious injuries. As the deadly statistics rose, the highway finally qualified for the safety fund that is used across the state to make safety improvements. As a result of grassroots efforts and concern over the number of accidents and fatalities on Highway 71, a group called Citizens for Change on Highway 71, CC 71, was formed. CC 71 is an independent group of citizens focused on the improvement of safety on Highway 71 and is not affiliated with any other special interest group. The vision of CC 71 is a safer Highway 71 from Oak Hill to the Travis County line. The group is working proactively with surrounding communities, TxDOT, the Capital Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, and elected officials to establish a safer driving experience on State Highway 71. More than 10,000 citizens from across the region have signed CC 71's online petition. It is time now to face up to our transportation needs in this state. It is time now to find the funding to maintain and improve our transportation infrastructure. Thank you again for letting me speak.
Thank you, Ms. Cunningham. Any questions, comments? Thank you very much. Bruce Byron, followed by Doug Allen.
Good evening. My name is Bruce Byron, and I'm the Executive Director of the Capital Area Transportation Coalition, which was founded about 10 years ago at the suggestion of a guy named David Laney, who looked at what was going on or not going on in the Austin area and said, you know, you might have more success if you got the business community involved. So CATSE was formed, and along with the Chamber and other business groups have moved, and we've had the success of having an RMA formed. We were party to getting the TTA off the ground, and we got about $3 billion plus toll roads out of the deal, and have done quite amazingly well in a short period of time. But I think that we now face an even greater problem when we run out of money. And I think I've tried to analyze when people ask me what's gone wrong. I think, you know, we used to have the best State Department of Transportation, and I think we still do. But I think we face mega changes in how we fund things. And where we go from here. And it's more a matter of how we do things, I think, that going forward than it is what we do. All of us could sit down with a big chief tablet and write out dozens of projects that need funded. And it used to be that we all cash flowed our transportation system, at least the highway side. Now we're faced with we have to go after bond issue, both local and state. And that revenue to pay those is coming from other than gas taxes, which we all know is failing. But I think more than that, how we do things involves educating the public as to what we're doing. And as much as I love the governor and the administration, we have done most of the right things in most of the wrong ways. We've alienated the public, and there's not much trust in what's going on, and that has to be rebuilt. But I think we also have to look at the fact that it's a whole new world out there, and whereas I used to be able to make a pretty good case that roads were cash flowed and that transit was subsidized, we're now subsidizing both. And the transit agencies are sort of in a position where they are the dog that caught the car. They now have riders more than they can carry. The problem is they can't expand their service rapidly, if at all, because they're heavily subsidized, and they have to go back to the Treasury to get that subsidy to carry more passengers. The highway side is stymied because every new interchange costs $1 billion, and we've run out of $1 billion to provide. So I think that we need to re-look from the very basis of how we do this. And part of that is the fact that, the basics, as Dr. Walton would probably explain, of transportation has to do with weight and capacities and numbers. And if you try to run the maximum number of vehicles and the maximum amount of, design it for the maximum amount of weight, you end up with an exponential increase in costs. And we're getting systems we just can no longer afford to expand when essentially we're building a five-level interchange, and most of the interchange is there to hold it up because it's designed to carry a semi or a concrete truck when most of the people using it are in vehicles that weigh less than 6,000 pounds. Now, there's something wrong there, and I think that we have to look. There's a report that just came out of Texas A&M. As much as the TSIP hates to give A&M credit for anything, it's a consolidated view of advanced transportation systems. And any one of these could probably be brought forward to fruition in the next 10, 15, 20 years if there was money put into it. I think the other thing is we've got to find a way that these systems can be profitable. We frequently do public subsidies to do a train, a passenger train, or a bus, or multi-passenger vehicles, but the problem is those are the loss leaders of transportation. Freight underwrites the system from a profit viewpoint, although they probably don't pay their fair share of highways. You know, there's a lot of money that can be put into this if you went to a user system pay for what they're getting. And I think there are systems that could be designed that could move things quite rapidly. I think we need to look at both in a local viewpoint. You've got a good briefing of what our needs are from Joe and Bob. But I think when you're going to hear, you know, we need transit, we need roads, the old argument, we need both, is very true. And I think the fact that they've got to be better integrated. And we as an organization have tried to promote that you've got a transportation system out there. It's a pavement system, but we don't control it. We don't use it very well. We don't use enough managed lanes. We don't charge for the use of it. There is no marginal cost to use the system. So I think there's obviously a lot to be gained by better managing what we have out there, controlling it through tolling and congestion pricing, and integrating the transit, like bus rapid transit, into that system. So we're putting all of our money into one basket and not funneling it into different projects, which in some cases compete with one another, like the Leander Rail does with 183A Toll Road. Thank you for hearing us this evening, and we look forward to providing you comments in writing. Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Any questions, Bruce? Thank you. Next, Doug Allen, followed by Sandy Hinges, and then Howard Falkenberg, and that would be the conclusion. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Welcome. Chairman. Thank you very much. My name is Doug Allen. I'm with Capital Metro here in Austin, the regional transit authority. I'm recently moved to this area from Dallas, worked with Gary. Mr. Laney, nice to see you again. I'm here to talk about transit in the Austin area. I have a handout that's coming around, and one of the things that I wanted to highlight was the quality of life in Austin. And the reason for bringing that up, everyone is interested in maintaining the quality of life in their community. One of the reasons it's very important here in Austin is because we want to continue to attract and retain the creative class, the people who will come here and create new jobs, the high-tech economy. And so it's very important for us to try and retain that quality of life here in Austin. A couple years ago, there was an Envision Central Texas initiative that worked with the community and did a lot of research work with the community. And they found that the top challenge to the quality of life here in Central Texas is transportation and congestion. It was far and away the top issue here in Central Texas. And so that's why we're so focused on trying to keep a handle on the traffic congestion here and try and address that. We're also very environmentally conscious here in Austin, which is another reason that we'd like to try and work on this traffic congestion issue. Transit has been demonstrated to meet a lot of the needs in addressing that transit transportation and congestion issue. TTI estimated that without Capital Metro moving people, there would be an additional about 2 million hours of congestion annually that would be put back on the streets. We have also, transit serves a role in addressing congestion in a number of different ways. One of them is that transit serves a higher proportion of the traveling public during the rush hour versus the other modes. And so that when we do put in a transit project, it has a greater effect on the congestion than another might have. It also encourages more dense land use, a more concentrated land use, which is more efficient to serve with transit. That's particularly the case with the rail program that we've seen around the country. We have a lot of great regional partners here in Central Texas. You've met a number of them with the CTRMA. Mike and his group, Joe at the Campo group. We've been fortunate to have that type of partnership. Our role in the traffic congestion mitigation is to come up with the transit component. We have an all systems go plan is what we call our long range system plan that has a number of different tools that we use to meet that need. Obviously buses are a big part of it. We also are developing a couple of higher capacity, more attractive options for the traveling public. Two of them I want to talk about tonight. One is the Metro Rail project, which is actually not too far from this location, just about a half a mile away, actually. It's a 32-mile, I want to call it light rail system, that's what we consider it to be. That's a unique system. It's a diesel-powered, has a diesel-powered, has a diesel generator on that produces electricity and generates its own electricity. It will go from Leander to downtown. It'll open up later this year. And the cost is around $100 million. And so the value of that is it's a relatively inexpensive and relatively affordable rail system that will serve that high-growth part of Austin. The other thing that we are working on is bus rapid transit, and that also is going to go in the north-south orientation of our area. We are working to submit an application to the federal government to hopefully receive some federal funds to help implement that program. So we are trying to do our part in meeting the congestion needs here in Central Texas. One of the needs that we have, as we had in Dallas that we worked on, is that a lot of the cities around us don't currently belong to the transit authority. That's because we're funded with a 1% sales tax. Those cities have used that sales tax for other reasons. Projections show that by 2030, if something doesn't change, about half of the population in Central Texas will not have the opportunity to have public transportation because of that anomaly. What we've done at Capital Metro is to pass a policy on service expansion where we would work with non-member cities to come up with a partnership arrangement where we would help them plan what their services would be and then help implement those services. They would pay the full cost. We just passed that. We haven't had a lot of opportunity to work with the new cities about with that initiative. We're hopeful that will start to address the issue, but it is something that we're hoping that the legislature will give us a few more tools so that we can add more people to the transit system. Glad to answer any questions if you have any. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Doug. Any questions, comments? Yes.
I'd just like to say, Doug, we appreciate all the time and effort you spent in Dallas helping the system get to where it is at Dart. I know you'll do good things here in Austin.
Great. Thank you, Doug.
I'll add, too, we won't ever forget that you left Dallas.
And let me just say how delighted we are to have you in Austin. And I know Fred speaks highly of you, so thank you very much for coming this evening as well.
Thank you.
Sandy Hinges and then Howard Falkenberg. Sandy?
Yeah.
Good evening. My name is Sandy Hinges. I'm a Senior Vice President for Public Policy at the Austin Chamber of Commerce. You've heard quite a bit of what I was planning on saying, so I'll work around that. Last year, the Austin Chamber and a number of the other business community organizations here got together and worked on a program we titled Take on Traffic. I encourage you to go to our website because it attempts to distill down into kind of everyday person's language what the problem is that we're facing here in Austin. We have very conservative estimates. We try to be that very conservative, but if you look at the numbers of people moving to this region in the three-county area alone, we have something like 500 additional cars on our roads every week. Every 20 minutes, we have an additional car in front of us on the road. And so that right there is a good way for us to help explain to people kind of what the problem is, what the problem is and how it's going to continue to increase over time. Through the Chamber's Economic Development Program, Opportunity Austin, we also have an effort where we go out and we meet with major employers as well as medium-sized and small employers every year, about 120 companies. We have a 45-minute survey that we do with them, and we ask them what are the issues facing your industry, but also what are the issues in the community that are impacting your businesses. What we've heard for the past 3.5 years, and the top three have been three issues over and over again. Air traffic, how many places can we fly to directly, workforce, and surface transportation. Those three move around as to what's number one. Most recently, it was surface transportation until we had this wonderful issue with all the airlines trying not to go bankrupt. But it has continued to be on a regular basis. Transportation is one of our top three issues that our companies are interested in. And I just wanted to share with you a couple comments from some focus groups that we had 5 years ago when we started this process, but they continue to be true today. One of the participants, and you heard Bob talk about this earlier, you can't bring product in and you can't get it out. That's one of the reasons Dell moved out of Austin. And they moved out of Texas, obviously, as well as he mentioned, they went to Tennessee. It was a huge loss for our economy. Austin's a nightmare on traffic. Give up on going east-west, it's not going to happen. And the third person said, transportation in and out of Austin is really difficult. That's a challenge. It's really tough. Well, it's something that our businesses are continuing to come back to us. We met with Just Major Employers a couple, about 6 months ago, before gas hit $4. And they were saying that one of their number one issues for retaining and recruiting employees to this region was, in fact, transportation. So it's not just an issue of the bottom line for their business in terms of moving product in and out. It's also a huge issue getting the talent and keeping the talent, as Doug was talking about a few minutes ago. Now that gas prices have gone up to $4 a gallon, we're actually hearing from them, you know, we need more options for our employees, more things than just, you know, we do need more roads, but we also need options so that they can carpool or vanpool, manage lanes, HOV lanes, things along those lines, and also a more robust transit system. We're helping them to understand what we do have here, which is a great system, but then we're also looking at ways that we can help to improve that. There was a question earlier about how can you include transit, I think, in the regional planning. I think that just putting it on the table every time you look at what our problem is that we're trying to solve will be a great start down that path. And then finally, I think I covered my final point already. So I think that's it. You had any other questions?
Sandy, thank you. Any questions, comments from Sandy? Again, thank you very much. Howard? And as Howard's coming forward, I have no other cards to speak, so I'll ask at the end of Howard's if anyone else has wishes to speak.
Chairman Walton, Commissioner Laney, Mr. Johnson, gentlelady and gentlemen, appreciate the opportunity to speak with you tonight. I'm Howard Falkenberg, the chairman of the Capital Area Transportation Coalition. You heard from our executive director a bit earlier. I don't have prepared remarks, but I'd like to speak to, just to identify really, seven transportation priorities that I believe are important. I hope I don't just state the obvious, but I think that these are part of the considerations that you must take into account as you continue your deliberations. Number one, we must have adequate, predictable, and reliable funding. It's obvious. What's happening without that funding is obvious. We need to devise an alternative to the gas tax based on usage, mileage driven, road classification, vehicle weight. We need to use tolls wherever possible. We need public-private partnerships. And we need to leverage income with debt, especially when construction costs are climbing faster than interest rates. In the meantime, we absolutely need to stop Fund 6 diversions. We have to have that money for our road system, not only to build it, but to simply maintain it. A second priority to me is greater use of pricing mechanisms to control congestion. Toll roads and managed lanes with congestion pricing. We need better intermodal use of road facilities, greater emphasis on bus rapid transit, which Bruce mentioned, express buses, vans, and carpools. We need improved connectivity and bottleneck removal. Fewer lanes can carry more traffic if they are fully connected, and in that regard, we need strong incident management programs. We've lost our program here in Austin because of funding. CATSI is working with others to try to develop a program, perhaps with some local funding that can replace the TxDOT program, because nothing solves a mobility congestion problem faster than getting an incident off the street. We need continued adequate maintenance of existing roadways. That really needs to be a baseline. I mentioned that a while ago. If we rob Peter to pay Paul, we all end up in the poorhouse. It saves so much money in the end to do proper maintenance. And with the funds that are available, TxDOT has to do that, which leaves no money to meet the needs of a very rapidly growing Texas. We need public education on funding mobility issues. The public simply doesn't understand, and I believe that if we do educate them properly, we can achieve improved understanding, which leads to increased willingness to support our transportation needs. Here in the Austin area, CATSI, along with the Greater Austin Chamber, the Real Estate Council of Austin, and others, developed a take-on-traffic program to create an awareness of the need for improved roads and specifically for the need for us to have a whole toolkit of by which we could solve congestion and mobility problems. And people responded to that, and I think on a statewide basis, they would as well. They worry about the congestion. They're bothered by the congestion. They don't understand the connection between that and solving it through increased funding. And finally, as I believe Chairman Laney did during his term of service, and as Governor Perry has tried to do, we must think in new and different ways about our transportation needs, whether it's RMAs, whether it's the Trans-Texas Corridor. Not everything may ultimately be successful, but we must push the envelope to try to find those solutions. So those are my priorities, and I commend them to you for your consideration, and I thank you for your time and service. Thank you.
Howard, thank you very much. Excellent. Any questions or comments? That's the completion of the list of people who have signed up in advance. I'll open it up to see if there's anyone else who'd like to make a brief comment. Anyone else before we close? Yes. Mike, welcome.
This is going to be very brief. But I, one of the things I really, as you guys go through your deliberations, I really think you guys got to get your arms around is what inflation is doing to our projects. And I was just sitting here thinking about this. Between now and the time that you make your report in December, we will lose $100 million of value in Central Texas alone if inflation tracks the way it's been going. We can't catch up with it. We've got to get as many projects into the pipeline as possible, as quickly as possible, and get them through the environmental process as quickly as possible. Not only are we filling the funnel in Texas, but we're filling it nationally. The inflation issue just scares the dickens out of me, and I think that issue in and of itself requires you guys to give some thought to your final report and how quickly we ramp up in this next session. Think about that. $100 to $150 million in the next 6 months is what we lose.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Seeing none, then I'll turn to the committee and see if anyone has any comments they'd like to make before we close the public hearing. Seeing none, then I will close the public hearing. In so doing, I do want to express our appreciation for all of you for coming and assisting us in this effort. I can assure you that we're taking this effort extraordinarily seriously. I've been impressed not only by the members of the committee, but by their dedication and commitment to this endeavor. So we need all the help we can get. We appreciate your participation. We have several more hearings around the state. And again, our appreciation for coming out and being with us tonight. If you do have any follow-up comments that you think of, please send them to us. We'll deal with them. Ladies and gentlemen, we're closed. Thank you very much.